and welcome to a very special episode of Mondo Hollywood. I'm joined here with Ultrasonic Films' James Borsa.
Hello very much.
And we have a very special guest today. We just heard the Rainbow Connection, the great and talented Paul Williams.
Yes, yeah, so Paul Williams is joining us. He is a Grammy winner, a Golden Globe winner, and an Academy Award winner. And his film, Phantom of the Paradise, is going to be playing on the Gimli Film Festival on the beach on the big screen. Mr. Paul Williams, can you hear us, sir?
I can hear you beautifully. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us here on the show. I really do appreciate it.
You know, I have to. You're out of Winnipeg, right?
You bet. Right out of the University of Manitoba.
Well, I have to give you an idea of how much I love Winnipeg and what the people of Winnipeg have done for my career. I mean, right now while we're talking, you know, the last few holes of the Open are on right now. I'm a big Tiger fan, so I was watching golf in bed and eating oatmeal. But I love Winnipeg so much. You know, that I'll just go ahead and record that and check it out later.
Absolutely.
That's how much I love everybody up there.
Well, that sounds great.
And I've had the great pleasure of seeing you live playing here a couple of times, and it was always a great show. So thanks very much.
Thank you. The first time you must have been seven if you saw me.
Well, sir, of course, we've got Phantom of the Paradise, which is going to be at the Gimli Film Festival. It's going to be literally shown in the water. They're going to create this gigantic screen, and everybody's going to lie on the beach. There's going to be hundreds of people checking it on out. That's going to be this Thursday night at 10 p.m., and it's an amazing cult classic. I got to ask you, sir, first of all, what do you remember about making this incredible film?
You know, I remember a lot of it. I mean, it was a unique kind of a hybrid of both of my careers. You know, when Brian De Palma asked me to write the songs for Phantom, I thought it was, you know, looking back, it was just the strangest casting because, you know, I had very middle of the road kind of a successful songwriting career with the Carpenters and Three Dog Night and like that. But I was probably as far away from the kind of, you know, rock, you know, of the future that the script called for. Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing was, all of a sudden, I was able to dive into something that was just certainly edgier for me, and a chance to in a way to just really kind of play with the various genres that I hadn't really visited before. You know, the 50s rock, and then
yeah.
You know, the variety of styles and all, and so it was a great, you know, it was just musically, it was a great challenge. But then when he said, you know, and his original thought was, you know, you ought to be the Phantom. You should be crawling around in the rafters, throwing things at people. And I thought, I can't do that. I'm too little to be that scared. You know, so, but Bill Finley was brilliant, and you know, he could do more with that one eye than anybody I've ever seen. As far as conveying all that emotion, just a brilliant performance. But the thing I remember, the reason I go to the music first is, you know, when then Brian, you know, asked me to play Swan. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I'm full tilt in both worlds. So we're shooting during the day and doing recording vocals at night. And I have a couple memories of standing with a camera on me and not even knowing where I was. I was so tired. Probably the peak of that would be the umbrella scene, you know, on the roof with the Phantom when I pulled a knife out of his chest when we shot there the first time. I think I'd been up like a day and a night and a day, and we were into the second night. And I couldn't even remember lines. It was just, I was so exhausted. But we reshot it, and it wound up in the movie. And the thing that I will always, always love about it is that the sense of family in the middle of the holiday season, and it will always remain a high point of a working family.
I also want to mention 1976's Bugsy Malone, which I also think is a very underrated and kind of cult soundtrack now today too. There a specific, because all the it's play there's kids in the movie, but all the adult voices, including yourself, you're on the soundtrack. Was there a decision consciously to do adults as the kids' voices?
There was a problem because it was shot in. First of all, it was shot in England, with most of the kids were like army brats and the like. You know, kids who, you know, were, their dad or their mom was stationed in England. a lot of the American actors. It was one thing to, you know, to use a lot of non-professionals that, you know, they could act. And if you got lucky, you found someone that could dance. And to find somebody that could do all three. And the songs were being, you know, were written very close to when the shooting was taking place. So because the cars were pedaled, but they made all this, you know, they had this, you know, this sort of a car taking thing where they sounded and looked like cars, but they were pedal cars. Because the guns were, you know, were guns, but they shot, you know, shot custard. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, well, why did they, you know, why not have the voices, you know, what happens if Bugsy, who is talking like this, all of a sudden sings, you don't have to sit around. And it just seemed like it solved a big problem for us. And, you know, and it gave another little kind of a twist to the, you know, it's really an unusual project. When I read the script, I saw the first storyboards that Alan did. I went, oh, my God, I've got to do this, of course. But looking back, I'll tell you, I have kind of the edge of a regret about that. I think that while it solved the problem, and I think it's some of the charm of the picture, every now and then, in the middle of the night, I'll kind of open my eyes, look at the ceiling, and go, you dubbed, you used a different voice, you know, for Jody. And it's like, oh, my God, a brilliant actress like that, and you had her, you know, lip-sync somebody else's voice. And there's part of me that if I could go back, I'd like to just try to let the kids sing it and see how that would work out. So, you know, second thoughts about that.
Yeah, I got to tell you, you know, you've had an amazing career. Just researching you before we got an opportunity to talk today, it's amazing all of the different projects that you've been on. I'm very curious, when you meet people, is there a particular project that you did that people are surprised that you did the score for, or that a particular film that you appeared in that people are surprised about? What the work that you've done kind of surprises people the most?
I think that, right, I don't know if you have any awareness of Goliath, the Billy Bob Thornton series, but right now I'm a recurring character on Goliath, the Billy Bob, and I'm starting to get a lot of, you know, people coming up and cool. saying, I had no idea you were in that, and you know, so that's really nice, and it's current, and, you know, for an out-of-work actor, you know, I've always said that, you know, I'm really, really fortunate that for an out-of-work actor, I did pretty good as a songwriter, But I always loved, you know, the film, and I did start out as an actor.
Yeah.
So I, you know, dove into working on films from a music side, of course.
Right.
And I would be remiss if I didn't ask about Ishtar, because Ishtar, I think, is the first 20 minutes of that movie where they're just in New York and the struggling songwriters, that is like a perfect comedy. And I think the songs that you wrote for them are amazing.
You know, it's probably as close to what it's like to be a songwriter as anything I've seen on screen. I'm really, really proud of that. And I think I wrote 50 songs.
Wow.
For Ishtar. And Elaine May was very specific that she wanted something very unique. Mm. But she said, I can't really describe it to you. I will know it when I hear it. And I wrote some songs. The thing is, if there's a song in a movie where one and Dustin is sing maybe two lines of a song. Mm-hmm. She wanted to hear the whole song. She's out, and I don't want you to sing it to me, because everything you sing sounds like a, you know, like music. Teach it to Warren and Dustin and have them sing it, so I'm cooking along and writing songs, and she's nodding her head, I'm not sure. I said, well, what do you want? She said, I don't know. But the first one I wrote that she said, that's it, was a song called that a lawnmower can do all that. Yeah. And for those who've never heard it, you know, Saturday morning, the sound of a lawnmower touches my soul, brings back the memory of first summer love, of Willa and me, Willa, that a lawnmower can do all that, that a lawnmower can do all that, that a lawnmower can do all that, it's amazing. And here's the verse, what she heard that lit her up. I can see her standing in the backyard of my mind. She cracks her knuckles and the scab that's on her knee won't go away. I can see the woman waiting in her eyes, and I can see the love, but I can't see the Brooklyn Dodgers in L.A.
That's awesome. Thank you, sir.
So I knew then what she wanted. And, you know, again, that was, you know, everything that really, really attracts me, I think, sometimes are things that are just a little strange. My whole history with the not strange, I mean weird, but strange. It's just a little, oh, I haven't seen that before. My road band, the guys that played in my band, and I, we spent so much time on the road, and part of waking up in a weird little town anywhere in the world was you could turn on the television and watch Sesame Street, and there was something about the humor and the heart of the Muppets that just, you know, when I finally met Jim and went over to do the Muppet show in England, and he asked me about they were going to do a Muppet movie, but before they never mentioned that, he mentioned that there was a project for HBO called Emma Daughter's Jug Band Christmas, would I write the songs for it? But if you look at that, you know, Bugsy Malone and the Muppet movie and Ishtar and Phantom, there's just something a little different about each of those projects.
Yeah.
And they're amazing directors and writers. They created them.
And is there any truth that there is a, I know there's a 45 out of Ishtar songs. Was there actually a whole album recorded?
We recorded an entire album with great rock and roll players. I mean, Waddy Waddell on guitar, and you know, just an amazing band, full tilt hardcore rock and roll versions of all the songs. But you know, when the movie came out, it didn't get the best reviews. Perhaps you heard.
Oh yes, oh yes.
It's interesting because recently the New York Times re-reviewed it and gave it a great review.
Mm.
But when it came out, basically they I think reviewed the shooting schedule and the budget instead of the film, and also. But when the reviews began to roll in and they were so negative, the idea of releasing the soundtrack album, which is like the whole point of doing all the very end of the picture, you see the album cover of, you know, their greatest hits, which was exactly what this album was going to be. So there was a marketing plan built into the film, but I think Warren said, you know what, that's enough Ishtar in my life for right now. Someday you'll get to hear them all, you know, in that version, I hope.
Yeah, because I have the Portable Picnic we're going to be playing later, and it's just a great song. And like one of my favorite lyrics of all time is, if you can admit you can play an accordion, no one will hire you for a rock and roll band. That's just
dangerous
genius.
Business. Yeah. Yeah. You know, Jim, well, if you think about it, because they're just kind of mismatched, and they're almost good songs. I mean, it's easy to write just stupid songs, you know, my dog eat the cat, where's my shoes, you can, you know, write whatever you want. But to write something that sounds like they were off, I mean, like telling the truth can be dangerous business. Honest and popular don't go hand in hand. That's a pretty good start.
Yeah.
If you admit that you can play the accordion, no one will hire you in a rocket. So it was probably as much fun as I've ever had writing songs.
Speaking of fun, I have to ask you, with all of the different projects that you've been on over all of the years, I know this is kind of like picking your favorite children, but was there one experience that was absolutely unforgettable that sort of stands above the rest?
I think everything with the Muppets, for sure the Muppet movie, was really a unique experience. And to sit down and see what, you know, okay, this is what we're going to write. And basically sitting in the living room of my place and with Jerry Jewell, the screenwriter, and Jim and Frank Oz and the guys, and just going, okay, what are we going to do here? Jim said, well, we're doing a road picture about how the Muppets get together. And because they're looking for frogs, they want to become rich and famous in Hollywood. And to be given a kind of freedom to just, you know, I mean, literally, and I've told this story before, but it's so unusual in the business, but walking after our first meeting with Kenny Asher and I up to, because I wanted Kenny to come in and write the songs with me. His melodies are so beautiful.
Yes.
But I walking to the car, I said, you know, we're not going to surprise you with all this stuff. I'll let you hear the songs along the way while we're working on them. And he said, oh, Paulie, that's not necessary. I'll hear them in the recording studio when you record them, which is a level of freedom. You know, and, I mean, he trusted that he had made the right creative choice and let us go.
Awesome.
And it was really unique. But to sit down and write the big quote, I am song, is what you would call it. You write the I am song for Kermit. We want to learn about Kermit in this first song. Well, how does the movie begin? Well, Kermit's in the swamp. What's he doing? Jim thought for a second and he went, playing a banjo. Okay, all right, so playing a banjo. But you want to write a song that shows that he has an inner life, that he has a spiritual life, you know, that he thinks about things, that he questions all the big questions. And the standard that we set was from Pinocchio. In Pinocchio, when Jiminy Cricket calls into that window, takes off his hat, looks at the stars and sings, "When you wish upon a star," he takes it to a level that is just above and beyond, you know, and just a song, you know, this is what your movie's about. It becomes a spiritual journey just to listen to that song, and that's what we tried to do with Rainbow Connection, and the entire film was that kind of a challenge there. And as much fun as almost as much fun as Ishtar.
And I think I was reading that you were working on a musical version of Pan's Labyrinth.
Guillermo del Toro, Gustavo Santaolalla is a brilliant, brilliant composer. It's his music, my lyrics.
Wow.
And it's funny. We've been working on this like 4 years. We basically have just at this point finished the score. I mean, we'll continue to work on it, but they're talking to teachers right now.
Oh, wow.
It's my son's favorite movie, so I'm really excited about this eventually getting to the stage, and hopefully we'll open in probably London first, and then, you know, it's a long, long process working on a stage musical. Movies, television shows, you fly through those a lot quicker, but this one has been probably the most emotional collaboration of my life is with Gustavo. He's brilliant. He won the Oscar for Brokeback Mountain.
Yes.
And then the next year won it again for Babel.
Yeah.
Worked on Motorcycle Diaries, which is an amazing movie. So his music is full of, you know, I say that the words are already in the music. I listen to the music and I hear the words. And his music is just filled with wonderful, wonderful emotion.
Yeah.
And great, hopefully will be considered great, you know, good as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I got to talk a little bit more, of course, about A Phantom of the Paradise. There's a real special connection between that film and Manitobans. And, you know, it's amazing. It's a film that seems to get more popular every year. And yet we kind of knew it first. It was something that we embraced right from the beginning. I'd love to get your take on why that was. Why do you think that Manitobans really embraced this special film so early on?
Well, Peggers are not only smarter than everybody else, they're better looking. So,
I'll buy that.
The enthusiasm. I don't think the film would have the following that it does today if it hadn't been basically a failure worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
There were two cities where the film clicked. One was Winnipeg, the other one was Paris. And I think for the people that really loved the film, you know, it was almost like a slap in the face. It was like, you know, don't you see I hope and everybody has followed in their opinion that it was wonderful. So what they did is they shared it with their friends. Mm. I mean, and shared it like it was their own, you know, personal private discovery. So the things that I'm doing today, like working with Guillermo, is because he loved Phantom of the Paradise.
Awesome.
The reason Daft Punk sought me out, you know, they met at the theater, and you know, the two robots, you know, Toma and Demon, met at the theater, and they, you know, they've seen, I think they said they'd seen Phantom like 20 times together at the, you know, at the theater, and maybe where they got the idea for the masks and the like as well, but when they called and asked if I would work on it, they were going to do an album, and would I be interested in writing, working on the album, and I want to write the lyrics for a couple of songs, and they asked me to sing Touch.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote the lyrics to Beyond Touch on Random Access Memories. Wind up standing on the stage accepting the Grammy with them for Album of the Year.
Wow.
There is a little bit of every pegger that loved that movie and told their friends about it in that moment, because if it hadn't been for that, if it hadn't been for the fanaticism of the, you know, the great population of Winnipeg, I'm not sure that I ever would have had that chance. Forever grateful, forever.
Awesome.
And I was happy last summer to see you pop up in Edgar Wright's Baby Driver. You had a really good kind of juicy scene in that movie.
Again, Edgar Wright is, with him, I think it's more probably Bugsy Malone. In England, every kid growing up does Bugsy Malone. I think he would on stage at their school and all. And
yeah,
it's kind of like Grease is in the States, and it off here like it did in England, but in the UK. But Edgar has just been a great friend, and I thought it was a fun role. It was like four pages of weird dialogue about parts of a pig, and stuffed into about a 2-minute scene and all. And don't look for me in the sequel, thanks to Jamie Foxx and all. But that was fun, and I loved the movie. I thought it was amazing. Cool. But if you get a chance, check out the second season of Billy. Actually, you watch both seasons. I don't come until the second episode of the second season, but I'm really, really just to work with Billy Bob Thornton
mm-hmm. on Goliath.
A whole other level of acting. So I hope that you'll all jump on Amazon Prime and check out Goliath.
Awesome. Well, like I say, we're very, very excited as well, of course, to a Phantom of the Paradise. It's going to be on the beach, and there's going to be hundreds of people checking it out, which is often very common with the beach screenings. It's a free screening. I'm curious, in all the places in the world that this film has screened, what's been one of the most exciting or unusual screenings that you've ever attended of Phantom of the Paradise?
In Austin, Texas, they show it on the side of a building or something, and just a great... Great. I don't know why, but I just got this. Okay, if I was writing a screenplay and I wanted them, I was thinking about how do you use this setting? Okay, there's the screen set up in the water, and they're all watching Phantom when a giant shark comes along and eats the screen, and a couple of workmen that are out there as well. It's like Jaws eats Phantom. I think we could sell it if we get together and work on it.
That sounds like a great spinoff. It's something we could certainly do.
Or did we just jump the shark?
Yeah, we literally jumped the shark. I love it. Yeah, no, I think it's just like I say, it's an important film for people locally, and I also really want to congratulate you on your amazing career. It's not often I get to chat with someone who's won a Grammy, a Golden Globe, and an Academy Award all together there, and to give back and be able to do a phone conversation from Los Angeles to us here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, at the University of Manitoba, really means a lot. And also, of course, supporting our local film festival, the Gimli Film Fest as well. We really do appreciate it there, sir.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it right back as well and everything. So this is a chance for me to say thanks to a lot of people who made my life so much better.
Awesome. Well, I'm James, and this is Amanda, and we're on a Mondo Hollywood here. And Amanda, would you like to say any final words there to Paul?
Oh, I just think he's the greatest. And the rest of we're going to be playing some of your music from the soundtracks. I'm really excited. Yeah, just to speak with you. I think you're brilliant.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You all have a great day.
All right. You take care there, sir.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.